Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Friday, June 6, 2003. In the Fireside Room, John Lauber continues his series on historic preservation at Holden, Stewardship of the Built Environment. Today's session is entitled The Challenge of Stewardship, Accommodatory Change While Preserving the Past at Holden Village. This is session LAJ 2003-5. Let's listen in.
A few minutes, and then we're going to go outside and take a hike to the top of the village and kind of work our way back and talk about what we've been talking about all week as it applies to Holden. So I'm going to spend about 5 minutes in here just going over some things I want to be thinking about as we wander around a little bit today. We talked the other day about Holden's history as a mining company town. And we talked about some precedents that kind of led up to this place or that were similar sorts of situations. But a couple things I want to point out as that reflect on Holden as it was, or the whole company town idea as it was played out at Holden. First of all, I want you to think about how there is a distinction made between the industrial site, which is the mill where you went with Don Wednesday, and the town site, separated by the creek. That side of the river was all designed by engineers. And I hope nobody here is an engineer, but I think it reflects that. I mean, the idea was that you had a machine on the hillside. And the Forest Service reviewed that just like they reviewed the town site, but a whole different set of rules was enforced over there. So you really see that machine on the hillside, and you see the Forest Service concern on that side of the river was primarily environmental, as we think of pure environmentalism. Even in the 30s, they were watching the mining company very carefully to make sure that environmental impacts from that tailings, that concentration, and milling process were minimized as much as possible. So you got a machine on that side, you got the tailings piles. It's an industrial site and a pretty nasty industrial site in a lot of ways. You walk across the bridge to this side of the creek, and a whole different set of things is enforced. From the company's point of view, some of that paternalism that we talked about at Lowell, Massachusetts, and Pullman, Illinois, and some other places, was very much at work here. First of all, you've got a mine. You all got up here, so you know how hard it is to get here. This was an isolated location. They had to do something to attract a workforce, first of all. And so one method for doing that was to provide as many amenities of normal life as could be provided up here in the wilderness. So you've got a town site that's got a gymnasium, a bowling alley, a lunchroom, a library, a little store, a big dining hall that's open 24 hours a day. Pretty decent accommodations for the 30s. All that was designed in part to make sure that they could attract a workforce that would work in that industrial site. There was another type of paternalism at work also. Here, as in many other mining situations, the company was very concerned about relations with the labor force. There was a union here, there were strikes here, but some of those amenities were offered with the idea that if you gave people a good enough living situation, some of those labor problems could be moderated a little bit. And if you look at the way the town site is laid out, I think there's some very interesting things about the physical layout of Holden Village. You notice that there's kind of a core where all those large dormitories are, the dormitories like your lodge, Lodge 4, the dining hall, the village center. They're concentrated in one area. And then along the fringe, you've got a whole different kind of development. You've got a first ring suburb. And in the first ring suburb lived all the mine officials. And your standing in the mine was somewhat reflected by how far away you were from the main street. The mine superintendent lived in the first house over here and had an easy walk to everything. I don't know who lived in Chalet 10, where we're going to go later, but it was somebody who was further down the corporate ladder. They had a bigger hike. And as you go up the hill, I want you to be looking at the accoutrements on these buildings, you'll notice that the style of the building changes a little bit. Look for things like fireplace chimneys, the amount of detail on the porch, the size of the porch, all those sorts of things were very directly reflective of who lived in those buildings. Then you get to the middle of town and there's a whole different aesthetic. First of all, there's nobody that lives in this whole area who's married. Mining is hard work, and my guess is that probably a lot of these folks were in their 20s. They were all men. That's an age when men have a lot of energy, a lot of raging hormones, I guess. I don't know what it is. But there was a very conscious attempt to concentrate that workforce, that single workforce, in one place and surround them with the administrators so that they could ride herd on that workforce a little bit. There were also rules put into place. You couldn't buy liquor up here. You could order it from Chelan. You could go down to Lucerne where there was a bar, but you could not buy it on the premises here at Holden. So there was a little bit of social engineering going on here even in the mid-30s. You'll also notice that, the buildings are different in the middle of town. Instead of having the nice wood shake roofs that you're going to see on the chalets, the chalets are very residential. They could be in any neighborhood, really, about any place. These are institutional buildings. And so there are economies of scale that were allowed in the middle of town that were not allowed on the edges. That's why you see metal roofing. For example, it would have been very expensive to put shingles and to maintain shingles on all those large buildings. So there were some very practical things that went into housing those large concentrations of people. The Forest Service concern on this side of the creek, they said over here it was environmental concern. On this side of the creek, it was visual. Primarily visual. There was a very stringent set of design requirements that was enforced by the Forest Service even in the 30s that reflects that rustic style we talked about the other day. And I want you to be looking for signs of that. We didn't talk too much about Holden's manifestation of the rustic style yesterday, but I want you to look for that as we walk around. What you'll see is some practical things that lent themselves to the rustic style. This is a heavy snow area, so the buildings have very steep gabled roofs to shed snow. There are covered entrances to every entrance in the village has a porch over it of some sort. And if you've been here in the winter, you know that saves you a lot of snow shoveling, because the snow is often as deep as the first stories of many of these buildings. By having a roof over all those entrances, you didn't have to do that to get in and out. And then there's some aesthetic manifestations of that rustic style as well. All the porches are trees, and they look like trees. Any wood building's a tree, but these look like trees. You'll see a tremendous variety of textures. This was part of the rustic style too, small pieces of things. And because this was a Forest Service permit that was at work here, the Forest Service administered timber resources for the country, and part of their internal aesthetic said, use wood, use wood, use wood, use wood. Well, at Holden they used wood. They used wood for the roofs, they used wood in many, many forms for all the siding materials. The windows were small panes, small pieces. Increases that sense of texture and roughness and makes you feel like you're in the wilderness. See if I've gone through my list here. Color was another thing that was very carefully monitored here, and also at Winston, the town site down the road. And it was a source of perennial distress to the miners who wanted to have houses that, you know, were in bright colors, or at least wanted to have a say about that. There are a number of letters written back and forth between the Forest Service and the mining company talking about, why can't I paint my house red? Why can't I paint my house blue? But they were very stringent about that. That was from day one, there was concern about using those muted, earthy colors to make the town site fit into the environment. As we walk around, we'll point out some of these features, and we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of other things. But I want you to, the stuff we just talked about, I want you to have in your heads as we walk around. That's kind of the baseline. That's where we start when we talk about the historic preservation of Holden, is trying to understand all those features, all those practical requirements, all the things the Forest Service wanted, and then see how it played out in the real town site and figure out what we need to do to preserve it. Now, the challenges for that are, there are many of them. There have been tremendous changes in function here at Holden. It was built as a mining town 40 years ago. It became a religious retreat center. That's quite a substantial change in function. And we're going to start our tour sitting right here without moving a muscle, because I want you to think about this room, which was initially part of one of those lodges like the one you're staying in the very early 1960s, when Holden became a retreat center. There was a need that had never existed before, and that was a need for some kind of program space where meetings could be held, where small group discussions could be held. And so an architect, a volunteer architect, came up here and reconfigured this building. So we've got this fireside room, which has been a meeting room for 40 years. We've got a library down the hall. That wasn't there before, and that required removing some partitions and so forth. So this was a very early adaptive reuse to change, to reflect that change in function. On our way to begin our walk, we're going to walk through another part of the building, and I'll talk about how that, how Holden's functional requirements have changed over time too. There have been changes in what people expect when they come to Holden. The very first people who came up here, you know, basically occupied the remnants of a mining town, and that's what was here. And there wasn't money to do anything else, and so that was what was expected. But we've all changed in what we are comfortable with, and Holden, albeit more slowly than much of the rest of the world, has also changed slowly to keep up with some of those expectations. There have been changes in technology and changes in thinking about environmental stewardship. I don't know how many of you know this, but most of the buildings, even these very large buildings at Holden, are heated with wood. If you're here in the wintertime, one of your duties as a resident of one of these lodges is to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and head down into the boiler room and stuff three large slabs of wood into the fireplace, the wood stove, and that's what heats the building. The only exception to that is the hotel, which is still on an oil system. There are auxiliary heating systems, there's electric heat in some of the buildings, but that only works during seasons like this when there's a lot of water flow, because Holden's electricity comes from a hydro plant across the creek. So in the wintertime, things freeze up, the hydro power slows down, and we're relying upon wood for heat. And that's played out to require some physical changes to some of the buildings. There have been changes in other things. We have computers up here now. We have all kinds of audio-visual equipment. That projector I've been using this week is about a month old. If I had been up here a year ago, I couldn't have shown my slides the same way. There are code and life safety requirements, accessibility requirements for handicapped people, and we'll see some evidence of some of those things. So there have been imposed changes as well as programmatic changes here at the village. Another thing we're going to look at on our tour is some of the maintenance issues that are faced up here. It's a tough environment, first of all, so things do wear out. All buildings try to become dust from day one. And some of the buildings here are doing a pretty good job of it right now. All the work here for 40 years has been done by volunteer staff, which means not necessarily always highly skilled staff. It's people with a lot of energy, but maybe not a lot of prior experience. Because of the nature of the buildings, sometimes the staff are dealing with unfamiliar construction techniques or materials. There aren't a lot of people around these days who know how to do good log work, for example. Sometimes it's hard to find appropriate materials, either because they're no longer manufactured or because to find a material that's the equivalent of what was available in 1935 is prohibitively expensive. So then you start a balancing act trying to figure out what can we afford and what will last a long time and what do people know how to deal with, and balance all those things out. And of course there's always the issue of money. Despite being a religious retreat center, people are aware of the bottom line here at some point. All that said, why don't we start walking? And this will be very informal. But we're going to start by just heading down the hall here. And I'm going to talk to you about one of the changes that was made in the 80s. Yeah, we'll end up back down here. Eventually we'll go out and kind of go out to this end of the building. You can leave your stuff here.
We're going out before we come back. We're going out from here.
Okay. I will leave it there.
No, I don't need my breath.
The beer when you come back.
Because if not, we'll find the culture.